Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Today's program is going to begin with what I call sticky stuff, or how baseball's war on sticky stuff is already changing the game. After Major League Baseball got serious about foreign substances, spin rates fell. Pitchers changed and hitting improved. This, according to a recent article in the Washington Post. Washington Nationals ace Max Scherzer, hat on the ground, unbuckled his belt as umpires stood around him. Oakland Athletics reliever Sergio Romo walked off the mound and pulled down his pants. New York Mets star Jacob DeGrom laughed as he held out his hat for on-field examination. That was the scene across baseball in June this year, as Major League Baseball began its much-anticipated crackdown on so-called sticky stuff, the increasingly tacky substances that have allowed pitchers in recent years to hurl baseballs that spin faster and faster, causing them to dive and to slide through the strike zone in ways that batters have never seen. Before the spectacle of on-field enforcement even began, word of its arrival trickled out around, say, June the 3rd, as Major League Baseball made it known it planned to increase scrutiny amid record-high strikeout rates. It appears to be working. Spin rates, or the number of revolutions per minute a baseball makes on its way to home plate, have decreased across the sport, according to a Washington Post analysis. Pitchers have said in recent weeks that it's difficult to grip the ball, and the Post analysis shows that. Some pitchers appeared to be searching for grip, using rosin, trying to find sweat, licking fingers, behavior that suggests they are trying to adjust to this new reality. Spin rate can be key to a pitcher's success. A pitch thrown with the same velocity will move differently depending on how fast it spins. And a pitch with a higher spin rate often moves more sharply than one thrown with the same velocity, but less spin. The Post analyzed the spin rate, controlling for velocity, for nearly 2 million pitches, focusing primarily on fastballs of more than 1,400 players from about 9,000 games from 2017 to 2021, including almost 70,000 pitches since June the 3rd. After climbing year after year, spin rates fell in the 3 weeks after June 3rd to levels lower than in 2017, when the data first started being tracked reliably, according to the Post analysis. But the steep fall, combined with batter's increased ability to make contact, appears to show that Major League Baseball's effort has been effective in reducing pitchers' advantage over hitters, at least in the short term. A noteworthy development amid historically anemic hitting. About 70% of the pitchers who threw more than 10 fastballs after June 3rd saw a decrease in their average adjusted spin compared with earlier in the 2021 season. Because the rise of the sticky stuff was being combated. Major League Baseball's official rules have long barred players from altering the ball. For years, though, pitchers have flouted these prohibitions, honing creative methods to maximize movement and confound the hitters. There are other reasons for the disparity, too, including pitchers throwing with higher average velocity than ever. But that velocity is combining with climbing spin rates to give hitters less time to react to pitches that are often moving more than ever. The result has been 20 years of rising strikeout rates, which culminated in this year's rate of 24% as of the day enforcement began, June 21st. A number that means almost a quarter of all major league at-bats end in a strike now. 30 years ago, it was 15%. Just to give you an example of the current situation, the Chicago Cubs recently acquired a player by the name of Wisdom. And he's done quite well. He's hit home runs and he leads all rookies in the major leagues at this moment with those 12 home runs. And I believe he's been up to bat some 140 times, but he has struck out over a quarter of those appearances. And so that's what Major League Baseball is trying to correct. It's not fun to pay a lot of money for a seat in the modern stadiums and watch players whiff, 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 three up and three down. Well, after last year's pandemic-shortened season, Major League Baseball committed to cracking down on sticky stuff. It sent monitors to stadiums to collect game-used baseballs and track changes in spin rates by a technology called StatCast. This is a state-of-the-art technology that allows for the collection and analysis of a massive amount of data. 2 months into the season, Major League Baseball outlined its findings. The use of foreign substances was prevalent and sometimes brazen, it said. It would respond by instructing umpires to inspect pitchers' hats, gloves, hands, and belts between innings and when they enter and leave the game, depending upon the situation. It also announced the progressive punishments beginning at ejection and a 10-game suspension for any pitcher found to be in possession of any foreign substance. Well, we'll see if the sticky stuff is removed by a little or by a lot, and whether or not the hitters regain some advantage over the pitchers. But this year, Major League Baseball batting averages for a team, 239, which is, describe it in one word, poor. We'll see if that Major League batting average rises now with the attack on sticky stuff. And now we want to look at the West's mega drought. California and the Southwest face soaring temperatures once again, a severe drought, and a hotter and drier new normal. Just what is the current situation? The West is in the midst of a widespread drought, an emergency of historic intensity. 72% of the West is under severe drought conditions, and more than 25% is an exceptional drought, the most extreme category. Many reservoirs are at record lows. For example, last month, Lake Mead, which provides water for 25 million people, hit its lowest level since it was filled in the 1930s. Mountain snowpack, which usually feeds reservoirs during the dry months through melting, is nearly non-existent. A record-setting heat wave baked the already parched region last week, and it sent temperatures up to 107 in Salt Lake, 116 in Las Vegas, and 118 in Phoenix. And this week, they're at it again. The current drought is on track to become the worst that the West has seen in at least 1,200 years. Just what's behind these conditions? Well, the immediate cause is record low precipitation. During the past year, combined with above-average temperatures. In Arizona, California, New Mexico, and Nevada, the past year has been the driest on record since record-keeping began in 1895. In Utah, it's the second driest. High heat intensities make the drought worse. In turn, that worsens the heat as soil moisture, which normally reduces heat through evaporation, declines. Droughts in this region are cyclical, but experts agree climate change is making this one, which has already lasted 20 years, far more severe. In a study published last year in the journal Science, researchers determined that climate change made drought conditions 46% worse between the year 2000 and 2018. We're living in a new climate, according to a Stanford University climatologist, who says these water deficits primarily result from the influence of warming temperature. Well, there are to be consequences, that's sure. Farmers deprived of water cannot grow their crops. We're looking at an absolute catastrophic year, according to the Fresno County Farm Bureau. In New Mexico, vast swaths of farmland are being taken out of use. The urging of state officials. And in California, up to 1 million acres of farmland could go unused this year at an economic cost of billions of dollars. Many of the 2 million Californians who rely on well water may well find no groundwater to tap. Electricity production from dams has dropped, and a hydropower plant at California's Lake Oroville faced a possible shutdown due to plummeting water levels. Even as scorching temperatures strained the power grid. Perhaps most ominously, the tinderbox conditions threaten a cataclysmic wildfire season that could surpass even last year's. All of these conditions are deeply worrisome for this summer, but they're part of a broader trend that could spell trouble for the region's future. Because of the broader trend, scientists suspect the Southwest is in the grip of a mega drought. That is, it's a severe drought that lasts for decades. In a study published last year, scientists who analyzed ancient tree rings identified four such mega droughts over the past 1,200 years. And they said that the one underway now may well equal the worst of them. Climate change may keep this drought locked in. Many scientists now speak of aridification instead of drought to indicate a permanent condition instead of a passing problem, a new normal. To make matters worse, the mega drought arrives at a time when the Southwest's population is booming. Arizona, Nevada, Texas, Utah, these are all among the fastest growing states in the country. We've always been dry, but we didn't have all these people, according to an inhabitant of St. George, Utah, where the population has grown nearly sevenfold since 1980. Well, we're going to take a short break at this moment because there is still more to say about this mega drought, about what can be done, and also the problems of the overtapped Colorado River. So, we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Back to our mega drought now, and the question is, what can be done about it? And what about the Colorado River? The Colorado River, which is overtapped. In other words, more of its waters are allocated than should be because it isn't there. Well, communities are going to have to adapt to a hotter, drier, new reality, which means making some hard choices. The region needs to drastically conserve and rethink how it is using almost every gallon of water. there may have to be fewer farms in the Southwest. With water rights transferred from agricultural to urban usage, water-intensive landscaping of grass and bushes will need to give way to less thirsty native plantings, driven by laws like one in Nevada that newly prohibits decorative turf. States will have to figure out how to live with smaller water allocation from the diminished Colorado River. It serves 40 million people over seven states. Some experts are optimistic that the region can adapt, yet others are less hopeful, pointing out that climate change is only going to accelerate. It's going to get hotter. According to a climate scientist at Colorado State University, he says, "We ain't seen nothing yet." Well, question of the overtapped Colorado River. As the Southwest broils in 100 plus degree temperatures, the Colorado River offers both a marker of the drought's intensity and a harbinger of coming battles over dwindling water supplies. Seven states drew from the river under a plan drawn up in 1922. But from the outset, that plan allotted more water than the river actually provided. And that shortage has worsened as the river's flow has declined by 20%, while the population that drinks from it has boomed. The river reservoirs, Lake Powell and Lake Mead, which together provide water for 40 million people, are both about 35% full. In 2019, the states struck an agreement, the Colorado River Drought Contingency Plan, that triggers mandatory water cuts once Lake Mead drops to a certain point, as is widely expected to happen this summer. But it expires in 2026, and the states will have to hammer out a new deal, one that will include painful reductions in their water allocations. That will require fraught negotiations between competing interests of cities, developers, farmers, conservationists, and native tribes. This is the new baseline. There's no more water left in the system. We have to begin again. We have our last item of the day. It's a little bit, we're going back in history a bit, to World War II. And we, at that time, Liberty ships helped carry cargo and contributed to the Allies' cause through their sheer numbers alone. The United States cranked them out faster than the Germans could attack them and sink them. The slightly larger Victory cargo ships came later, and there were fewer of them, but they were faster and harder to catch up with. Importantly, the two of them together, these two types of cargo ships, helped cement a win for the Allies in 1945. And now, friends, that's going to be the last item of business for the day. You know, the clock on the wall is my enemy. I have just so much time. And I want to tell you briefly about what you can look forward to in the next program. One of the things you'll find out is, did Betelgeuse, the star, burp? Another item that we're going to cover is landmine detecting bacteria. And then coffee versus liver disease. And finally, I'm going to be talking about a new book out called Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism. Sounds like quite a diverse, but I assure you, I think it'll be an entertaining program. So, this is Dan Doman, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. And Willie Nelson and I are going to be traveling down that road again, looking for things to include in our program. We hope you've enjoyed it. We work for your entertainment and to provide you with information. You take care out there. Be careful. I want you to come back and listen to our next program, 101.5 on the FM dial. A little of this and a little of that. Goodbye for now. Goodbye for now.